You're in tune to KZSU Stanford. It's time for another edition of Raising Sand.
The CIA is pushing crack in the ghettos of L.A. while the food crops in Colombia get sprayed by the DEA. The FBI is reading your email with something called the carnivore. While the rich are getting richer and the poor are staying poor, they're launching nuclear-powered ships up into space. One little accident could wipe out half the human race. They're putting radioactive waste into your silverware, or maybe your toaster, or perhaps your wheelchair. The Air Force is bombing Iraq every other day. They don't like the government, so the children have to pay. And the ozone hole is growing, the sheep are going blind, while the U.S. spends more on arms than the rest of the world combined. Journalists are getting fired from San Jose to Atlanta when they write about reality, not a fluff piece for Fanta. A death threat every week, and sometimes life is short when the truth is too dangerous for someone to report. And who will tell the people that free speech is a ruse? The corporations run the country, and then they make the news. Is it media or mind control, heroic victories or crimes? Who will tell the people that we're living in these times? The cancer rates are skyrocketing, though people are smoking less. If you live near a nuke, your life is bound to be a mess. Clean water's almost gone all over the earth, and what's left they want to privatize and see how much it's worth. Chevron is gunning down the students of Nigeria, turning the land to waste while the babies die of diphtheria. And the temperatures are rising, the world's forests are on fire. Pretty soon Brazil will be one raging funeral pyre. And who will tell the people that free speech is a ruse? The corporations run the country, and then they make the news. Is it media or mind control, heroic victories or crimes? Who will tell the people that we're living in these times? One in three adult Americans cannot read or write, and their children go to bed hungry every night. 2 million U.S. citizens are rotting behind bars, and while they're there, they're working hard building parts for cars. The Army's running torture schools to keep the earth under control, and they're relocating Navajos so they can mine some extra coal. Our taxes pay McDonald's to sell tumors in Shanghai, while 100,000 poisoned vets are just about to die. And who will tell the people that free speech is a ruse? The corporations run the country, and then they make the news. Is it media or mind control, heroic victories or crimes? Who will tell the people that we're living in these times? And the people are resisting wherever you may go. And this is the single biggest fact they don't want you to know. From New Delhi to New Mexico, there are battles going on. And the darkest hour is just before the dawn. In Berkeley and New York, they're raiding radio stations, trying to turn the voice of the people into the voice of the corporations. Will we seize the airwaves, wipe the sweat off of our brow, stand and face the beast and shout democracy now? Who will tell the people that free speech is a ruse? The corporations run the country, and then they make the news. Is it media or mind control, heroic victories or crimes? Who will tell the people that we're living in these times? That we're living in these times? That we're living in these times.
Welcome to another edition of Raising Sand Radio. This is the last edition for the year 2008. I'm your host, Susan Gallimore, and that was an excerpt from Dave Rovick's piece, Who Will Tell the People? And that's what we try and do here at Raising Sand Radio, bring you in-depth interviews, news, and views to you, the people. And today we'll ring in the new year with an assortment of music as well as a quick review of the latest news as we head into 2009.
Still trying to get up that great big hill of hope for a destination.
In case you missed it, as it wasn't reported widely on the news media, December 22nd saw a major breach of a cold combustion waste pond near Harriman in Tennessee. This event hasn't been covered much, as I say, although it did appear in the New York Times a few days after a 40-acre man-made pond containing millions of gallons of toxic coal ash collapsed in Tennessee, causing a disaster that environmentalists believe could be 30 times larger in scope than the Exxon Valdez oil spill of 1989. That in itself was one of the world's largest oil spills, and the devastation of this recent event may not be fully realized for months to come. Greenpeace is already calling for a criminal investigation. One of the worst-hit areas in Tennessee was the Emory River, very close to the source of the waste, which was a coal-fired Kingston power plant. I'm going to play some excerpts from video from the news from the area, but please go to our website, raisingsandradio.org, for links to the video where you can see it yourself.
Seeing this blackened moonscape, residents are still in disbelief. What hit eastern Tennessee Monday morning lit up emergency lines.
There's a heck of a mudslide of something that came through our backyard.
Not a mudslide, a sludge slide. In a retention pond outside a coal-burning power plant, sludge suddenly burst through a wall, sending 1.7 million cubic yards of it, enough to fill 520 Olympic-sized swimming pools, into the surrounding neighborhood and into the Emory River. From that spot, it's only 5 miles downstream to the Tennessee River, the source of drinking water for millions. Sludge spread over 400 acres, pushing Crystal Flynn's house 30 feet off its foundation.
You can see where it's broke up.
Her family salvaging what they can before the house collapses.
Oh, I've done all my breaking down, and I can't cry anymore, and I'm numb.
Another worry, all this sludge contains heavy metals like mercury and arsenic, so it's potentially toxic.
So far, water tests have come back negative for contamination, but it's still early.
Yeah, we're going to have to monitor, continue to monitor, to take a look. We don't know how far this is going to spread.
Removing sludge will go on for months, on land and in the rivers.
Stuff on the top we're going to skim off, and then we're going to go back and dredge that material out.
But nothing can skim this disaster from Crystal Flynn's home.
I don't know what they're going to scoop all this stuff up, and the grass is going to still be there. You know, so it's just wiped out.
Wiped out by a falling mountain of sludge, and worried this disaster could get worse. Mark Strassman, CBS News, Harriman, Tennessee.
We'll keep you updated on the story as the cleanup continues and as we learn more about how it is affecting people in the region. Grammy Award winner Kathy Mattee grew up in Charleston, West Virginia, of a coal mining family. Her album, Coal, is her way of paying tribute to, as she states, my place and my people. Thanks to Fast Focus TV for the following clip.
I grew up in a coal mining family. Both my grandfathers were coal miners. My mom worked for the United Mine Workers. My brother still works for a coal company. In early 2006, there was a disaster in the coal fields in West Virginia, where I'm from. And 13 miners were trapped, 12 wound up dying in that. And, you know, I was watching on the news, and I was just feeling a lot of emotion. I had been thinking about doing an album of coal mining songs for many years, and I'd been sort of squirreling away a little list of songs, and I realized that I was so frustrated and I felt so much about this that this might be a place to put that emotion.
The good man is gone.
One of the songs, Hazel Dickens' song Black Lung, took me 6 months to learn to sing. And what I found was that the tradition of these songs, most of them were not written to be performed or for any commercial reason. Most of them were written really out of someone's experience. It's the true folk tradition.
Black Lung's done got him, his time is nigh.
When I started learning about mountaintop removal, I had no idea what was going on, and it was just opening up a whole world. And I was able to go look at these mines. I was able to fly over them with the environmentalists, and I was able to fly over them and actually land at a mountaintop removal mine with some of the coal operators, the people who actually do this work. And so I got to see it from both sides. Even as careful as you can be, and many of these people who are doing mountaintop removal are trying their best to be as environmentally responsible as they can, there are still consequences that are sometimes unforeseen and sometimes really rough for the people who live around there. I met people who had their houses moved on their foundations from the blasting so close at a mountaintop removal site right next to them. People who have run the water out of their tap and found a half an inch of coal dust in the bottom of the glass. People who have to wash down their houses because the coal dust is so bad. Kids who develop asthma because the dust around the mines is so bad. And the thing that really struck me is that the people who live around these mines, you know, they don't really have a voice. They don't have, especially in any kind of public way. You know, the coal companies have money and they can hire PR firms. But these people, they're living through this, and any progress that we make rests on their backs. And it really struck me, you know, that if this was me living there, I would desperately want my story to be told. As cold
in the event of something happening to me, there is something I would like you all to see. It's just a photograph of someone that I knew. Have you seen my wife, Mr. Jones? Do you know what it's like on the outside? Don't go talking too loud, you'll cause a landslide, Mr. Jones. I keep straining my ears to hear a sound. Maybe someone is digging underground. Or have they given up and all gone home to bed, thinking those who once existed must be dead? Have you seen my wife, Mr. Jones? Do you know what it's like on the outside? Don't go talking too loud, you'll cause a landslide, Mr. Jones. In the event of something happening to me, there is something I would like you all to see. It's just a photograph of someone that I knew. Have you seen my wife, Mr. Jones? Do you know what it's like on the outside?
That, of course, was an oldie but goodie from the Bee Gees, New York Mining Disaster 1941. Before that, we heard Grammy Award winner Kathy Mattee. Her album, Coal, is her way of paying tribute to, as she states, my place and my people in the coal mining region around Charleston, West Virginia. Thanks to Fast Focus TV for that clip. Staying on the topic of coal mining and coal-fired energy, you can join Rainforest Action Network at an event called Power Shift from February 27th to March 2nd in Washington, D.C., taking action at the Capital Coal-Fired Power Plant, a plant in Washington, D.C. that literally powers Congress with dirty energy. In their invitation to join them, two of the organizers, Wendell Berry and Bill McKibben, state that they will be making several points. First point, coal-fired power is driving climate change. Foremost climatologist NASA's James Hansen has demonstrated that our only hope of getting our atmosphere back to a safe level below 350 parts per million carbon dioxide lies in stopping the use of coal to generate electricity. Even if climate change were not the urgent issue that it is, we would still be burning our fossil fuels too fast, wasting too much energy, and releasing too much poison into the air and water. We would still need to slow down and to restore thrift to its old place as an economic virtue. Another point, coal is filthiest at its source. Much of the coal used in this country comes from West Virginia and Kentucky, where companies engage in mountaintop removal to get at the stuff. They leave behind a leveled wasteland and impoverished human communities. No technology better exemplifies the out-of-control relationship between humans and the rest of creation. Another point, coal smoke makes children sick. Asthma rates in urban areas near coal-fired power plants are high. Air pollution from burning coal is harmful to the health of grown-ups, too, and to the health of everything that breathes, including forests. Industry claims that there is something called clean coal is, Barry and McKibben state, a lie told with millions of dollars, which, as we've seen as our economy crumbles, we do not have. Barry and McKibben's statement continues, "We have written and testified and organized politically to make this point for many years. And while in recent months there has been real progress against new coal-fired power plants, the daily business of providing half our electricity from coal continues unabated. It's time to make clear that we can't safely run this planet on coal at all. So we feel the time has come to do more. We hear President Barack Obama's call for a movement for change that continues past Election Day, and we hear Nobel laureate Al Gore's call for creative nonviolence outside coal plants. As part of the international negotiations now underway on global warming, our nation will be asking China, India, and others to limit their use of coal in the future and to help save the planet's atmosphere. This is a hard thing to ask because it's their cheapest fuel. Part of our witness in March will be to say that we're willing to make some sacrifices ourselves." To learn more about this event called Power Shift that will be held from February 27th to March 2nd in Washington, D.C., go to the Rainforest Action Network's website, www.ran.org, and sign up for regular updates. This is Susan Gallimore, your host with Raising Sand Radio at KZSU Stanford, FM 90.1. In our last show of 2008, we bring you an assortment of music for your listening pleasure, interspersed with news items from around the country and around the world.
Rulers of the nations, as you fuss and over who owns this or that and who has the right to design, build, a sell, and store and fire all the bombs and guns to defend your holy empire. There are children hungry, children sick and dying. There are mothers, fathers, sisters, brothers crying. They're only pawns in your play of power and corruption. Slowly starve them, your new weapon of mass destruction. And prove to me, America, that you care. And prove to me, America, you're aware. In this land, who pays the cost for the liberties you demand? Is it for freedom or our comfort and convenience? Is it to profit for big business we pledge our allegiance? Are we prisoners in the land of the brave and the bold, held by indifference or hearts grown hard and cold? And prove to me, America, that you care. You're aware. demand.
Jerusalem, je t'aime.
Early Saturday morning, December 27th, Israeli planes bombed Gaza, targeting some 40 Palestinian police stations, posts, and other sites. The first strikes came in a coordinated 3-minute blitz. According to Time World Online, More than 150 people, including a number of senior Hamas military leaders, were killed that day. Though no Israeli ground troops have crossed into Gaza so far, that remains an option, according to Israeli officials. Dozens of Israeli Air Force planes remain in the skies above Gaza. If they retaliate, they will feel it stronger and the number of casualties on the Gaza side will rise, a senior Israeli military source told Time. But Israel will need to move carefully. Airstrikes that kill large numbers of Palestinian civilians are only likely to fuel support for Hamas and ramp up international pressure to end the operation quickly. Here are two excerpts from Reuters reporters in the region. You can go to our website, www.raisingsandradio.org, to listen to and watch those videos yourself.
Israel is in the midst of carrying out its threatened counterattack on Palestinian militants who've been firing rockets across the border. Police compounds of the Islamist Hamas group have been targeted in a series of Israeli airstrikes across Gaza. At least 30 missiles have slammed into the enclave. There are bodies in the streets, how many isn't known. Hamas speaks of at least 40 dead and many more injured. The strikes began as children were on their way to school, sending frantic parents rushing into the streets. Our Reuters correspondent says Gaza City port and security installations of Hamas are badly damaged. There have been many explosions in and around the city. A truce between Israel and Palestinian militants expired last week. Israeli security officials have been briefing about the possibility of a ground offensive into Gaza, but it had been expected that Prime Minister Ehud Olmert was holding off on giving the order to strike. Susan Flory, Reuters.
This is the site where a rocket landed. It was fired by Palestinian militants from Gaza into Israel. One of the rockets hit this house. The rubble fell into this girl's bedroom.
My mother woke me up and said, "Shir, get up, get up." I didn't hear any boom. I only felt something landing on my legs. And I looked up and saw a big hole and I screamed.
Hamas and Islamic Jihad have claimed responsibility for the attacks. Israeli security forces said militants fired at least 7 rockets and 10 mortar shells. Israel confirmed the borders between the coastal enclave town and Israel will remain closed. Militants fired the rockets to avenge the Israeli killing of 3 of their gunmen. The violence has dampened hopes of a renewed truce between Hamas and Israel.
The Zionist occupation did not open the crossings in the first place in order for it to reverse its decision. As usual, they're using media tricks and fabrications to fool international opinion that they are opening the crossings. But in fact, it is maintaining the blockade on Gaza Strip and the siege of 1.5 million Palestinians in Gaza, a human massacre that the whole world can witness.
As the Israeli blockade of Gaza continues, both sides are pushing for new terms in the deal. Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak and Israeli Foreign Minister Zipi Livni will meet to discuss prospects of restoring calm. Basma Fahim, Reuters.
Again, go to Raising Sand Radio. .org, our website, for links to the video from which these excerpts were taken. That's www.raisingsandradio.org. Since Saturday, the death toll has risen to more than 280 Palestinians. According to the New York Times, Israel appeared to be setting in for the long haul. The government on Sunday approved the emergency call-up of thousands of army reservists in preparation for a possible ground operation, as Israeli troops, tanks, armored personnel carriers, and D-9 armored bulldozers amassed at points all along the Gaza border. The D-9 armored bulldozers are the ones they also use for home demolitions in Gaza and the West Bank. The New York Times continues that there were also disturbances in Arab neighborhoods of East Jerusalem and in some Arab Israeli towns. In a statement released by the State Department, Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice said she holds Hamas responsible for breaking the ceasefire and for the renewal of violence in Gaza. The ceasefire should be restored immediately, she said. Meanwhile, Palestinian officials said that at least 600 people have been wounded in the attacks. Militants in Gaza again fired barrages of rockets and mortars into Israel on Sunday, extending their reach further than they ever have before. One rocket fell in Gan Gavneh, a village near a major port city of Ashdod and almost 20 miles north of Gaza. Two others landed in the coastal city of Ashkelon. Several Israelis were lightly wounded. One man had been killed in a rocket attack before Saturday. and the first such fatality in months. The bloody images coming out of Gaza have already set off angry demonstrations in Egyptian cities and across the Arab world. In the West Bank, Palestinians observed a general strike as a sign of mourning for Gaza's dead and clashed with Israeli forces in some locations. Now, Israel is carrying out these attacks with F-16 fighter jets and missiles provided by U.S. taxpayers. From 2001 to 2006, the United States transferred to Israel more than $200 million worth of spare parts to fly its fleet of F-16s. In July 2008, the United States gave Israel 186 million gallons of JP-8 aviation jet fuel. And last year, the United States signed a $1.3 billion contract with Raytheon to transfer to Israel thousands of TOW, Hellfire, and Bunker Buster missiles. Now, we've heard of Raytheon most recently as a purveyor of cluster bombs. That was our show early in December when the treaty for cluster bombs was passed. And we looked at Raytheon and discovered their global reach. So go back and listen to that show when you have a chance. Their U.S. campaign to end the Israel occupation has issued an action alert with the following suggestions. You can contact the White House to protest the attacks and demand an immediate ceasefire. The number to call there is 202-456-1111. Or you can send an email to comments@whitehouse.gov. Again, 202-456-1111 or an email to comments@whitehouse.gov. You can contact the State Department at 202-647-6575. It's 202-647-6575. You can contact your representative and senator in Congress at 202-224-3121. It's for your senator and representative in Congress, 202-224-3121. You can also contact your local media by phoning into a talk show or writing a letter to the editor. You can also send us ideas here at susan@raisingsandradio if you have someone that you think would make an excellent interviewee. You can organize a local protest or a vigil, and you can sign an open letter to President-elect Obama calling for a new U.S. policy towards Israel and Palestine, and you do that at the United for Peace and Justice website, ufpj.org. Tonight, Monday, December 29th, at 5 o'clock, there is an emergency action, Stop the Attack on Gaza, silent vigil outside Dianne Feinstein's office at the Gomery and Market. Bring candles, posters, and banners, wear black, and it'll continue whether there's rain or shine. Tomorrow and Tuesday, December 30th at 5, you can join protests calling to stop the massacre of the Palestinians at the Israeli consulate in San Francisco, 456 Montgomery Street. Contact 415-821-6545 for more information about that. 415-821-6545, or you can email answer@answersf.org.
My grandpa fought in World War II, my uncle fought in Nam. My father was too young, he went to school and met my mom. And her dad always told us stories around dinner time. And there's one he told when I was young that sticks out in my mind. He said 10 years after Daddy taught me about the birds and bees, I was stranded in Pearl Harbor fighting off the Japanese. When the kamikaze pilots came and dove in without warning, I was on the Arizona on a warm December morning. I remember when I was a younger man, we were soldiers fighting in a foreign land. Now I'm old. Hard to have forgiveness for the things they did that day. And our president decided we
should make their people pay. So we dropped on Nagasaki and we cut him down to size. And the one we dropped on Hiroshima left them vaporized. And I heard some Christians say, what would Jesus do? What if you were on the wrong side? Would he point the gun at you? And they read through every word of Matthew, Mark, and Luke, and John, so they could see if killing was the side that Christ was on. I remember when I was a younger man, we were soldiers fighting in a foreign land. Now I'm older, and it's happening. They separate the church and state and keep God out of schools so our governments can educate based upon their rules. But people start to wonder if our politics makes sense when religion is our best excuse for national defense. And when our citizens start saying that our wars are not okay, and Washington keeps telling them God loves the USA, and they teach us history so we can learn from our mistakes. And this generation wants to know how many years it takes to change the way we treat our neighbors all across the land. 'Cause if we don't change our hearts, we repeat the past again. I remember when I was a younger man, we were soldiers fighting in a foreign land. Now we're older, and it's happening again. Grandpa finished talking, we went walking, he and I. I was thinking of the future and how scared I was to die. Now my best friend's overseas, in the desert where it's dry, fighting for our country, and I need a reason why. I remember when he was a younger man. Now he's a soldier fighting in a foreign land. Now we're older. God bring him home again.
In the past, Raising Sand Radio has broadcast many shows in the so-called Global War on Terror. You can go back and listen to any of those shows archived on our website, www.raisingsandradio.org. We have shows there sharing the voices of mothers of U.S. troops and Afghan and Iraqi mothers. We have audio of U.S. troops themselves talking about the war, and we have footage from the Winter Soldier 2 hearings, called Winter Soldier 2, as Winter Soldier Hearings 1 was testimony from the Vietnam War era, and vets on that, from that war, talking about the war from their perspective. So in the coming year, Raising Sand Radio will continue to air these kinds of show. Our purpose is to surface a wider, more integrated view of news and how it fits into our worldview. We question the espoused rationales of why wars are fought, which communities benefit and profit from wars, and the actual effects of the communities and the people that do not benefit or profit. We also bring you one-of-a-kind audio from voices around the country and from around the world, and suggest how you might learn about the wider implications of war. The music in the second half of our show included Sarah Thompson, Is It for Freedom? I Remember, from Griffin House. Thanks for listening to Raising Sand Radio at KZSU Stanford, and as always, views are those of the host and not KZSU or Stanford University. We wish you the best for the upcoming year and invite you to contact us with ideas for shows you'd like to hear in the future. You can do that at by emailing me at susan@raisingsandradio.org, and we'll continue to bring you voices from around the country and the world, and we have excellent shows lined up for you and hope that you will join us for them. We'll go out with the music of Willie King, Terrorized.
Terrorized all my days. I said you talk about terror. People have been terrorized all my days. No, you took my name. And you know you left me in chains. You wouldn't let me go to school. You know I couldn't read or write. They wouldn't let me go to school. And you know I didn't know how to read or write. You know they gave me the muse. And they called me a fool. Make myself. You know they laughed at me. And you know I didn't even make myself. You know they turned around and hung me. Hung me from the tallest oak tree. So you talk about terror. Talk about terror. I've been terrorized all my days. So you talk about terror. You know I've been terrorized all my days. You know I wish it would change. Got to change on the evil way. Now look at here. You know, I worked in the cotton field. I worked the hay field too. You know, I went on down home. And I even worked at sawmill. With no money. No money. And no shoes. Go on my feet. Didn't have nothing. Didn't have nothing. And you know. Didn't have nobody to feel my pain. I waked in the rain. Didn't have nobody to feel my pain. You know they hung me from the tallest oak tree. Changed my name. No, they left me in shame. You talk about terror. I say you talk about terror. I've been terrorized. I've been terrorized all my days. Didn't have a bite to eat. I worked all day. I can't even eat. Can't even sleep for the pain inside. I said, Lord, how much? How much on me? Talking about terror. Tell you talking about terror. I've been terrorized all my days, all my days.